Blog Talk Radio.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, where we happen to be getting a little bit of a cool drizzle of rain. Well, this is exactly what we need. And I am so happy you are joining us tonight as we are talking about some great law of attraction information, which may be exactly what you need. Tonight we're going to talk about a subject that deals about our underlying emotions that causes us to fight or flight or avoid and escape into something other than dealing with the issue at hand. This could very well lead us into addiction or not accomplishing what we need to find our magnificent self. So stay tuned. We've got some great information as we talk with Steve Riles, the author of Drunk with Wonder. Now, on the Law of Attraction Radio Network, this week, Dr. Harry Morgan Moses is talking with best-selling author and spiritual leader Terry Cole Whitaker about being prosperous every day, regardless of the world conditions. Terry's been on Oprah and every major news outlet, as well as Larry King Live. So tune in to hear Dr. Harry by going to Law of Attract. talkradio.com. And also on the Six Degrees show with host Anthony Bryce, we'll have Paola Leopisa Harris, a photojournalist and investigative reporter in the field of extraterrestrial related phenomenon research. For all of you interested in UFOs, you're going to want to hear this. And then don't forget Lisa Hayes in her Relationship RX show on how to create a magical relationship using three simple suggestions that will instantly transform a relationship. And this is in perfect time for Valentine's Day. Thank goodness about that. We've got so many great, wonderful shows coming up on Law of Attraction Radio Network, but I do want to let you know about the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Next week, we're going to be featuring Australian spiritual intuitive Dana Murick, who will be talking about her new book, called The New Chapter, which is about our evolution that lies before us. It's absolutely fascinating. You're going to love it. So stay tuned with us every day, 7 days a week on Law of Attraction Radio Network. I just want to remind people of what Joe Dunning said last week. We all know and accept that fear keeps on intruding into our daily lives. It's almost impossible for us to stay away from it right now at this point. We each have our own opinions about the economy and about the way things should be, and that's okay. But the most important thing to remember is that everything will turn out well for us. It might not be by the way that we are anticipating, but somehow, some way, trust that the best is yet to be. Get back to the basics of feeling the well-being for the love of our family, friends, and the divine gift of all the incredible beauty that surrounds us, the majestic mountains, the gentle streams being made from melting snow. Know that the materialistic and economic issues cannot disrupt the flow of water going downstream or the growth of new flowers in a field, or the clouds that float by us in a beautiful blue sky. Appreciate that they're all reminders that all is well in the world, that the world really doesn't revolve around money, and that there really are many things for us to appreciate as we celebrate the beauty of everyday living. We have no lack in the world except that which is man-made. Let's get back to the basics and understand that there is joy and happiness in being in the present. Now remember what Dr. Wayne Dyer said. We do not attract the things that we want. We attract the things that we are. Very important to remember. So let's talk about a wonderful guy named Steve Riles. Steve's the author of Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within. And he was homeless and shooting drugs in San Francisco Haight-Ashbury's district at the age of 17, to graduating from UC Berkeley on the Dean's List 6 years later. A journalist, Steve founded Rock Creek Press Publishing Company and has been a graphic artist, writer, and editor of many books and published many articles, including being a freelance music reviewer. Today, Steve is a minister of the Universal Life Church, and his book, Drunk with Wonder, teaches people how to experience a natural euphoria without any drugs or alcohol or the need to escape anything. This book, by the way, is very similar to the Conversations with God and What the Bleep. It teaches about our connection to our energy source, as well as the scientific documentation on spirituality. It is really, really a great book, and I highly recommend it to everyone. Welcome, Steve, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you, Jules. I'm so happy to be here.
And I'm thrilled that you're here, too. Let's start off and give the listeners a little bit of background of your history, and also what made you feel compelled to write a book like this?
Well, it's, of course, the story of a lifetime. As you might imagine, I'll give you my best Cliff Notes version. I felt compelled to write Drunk with Wonder because I have spent my own life searching for answers, and these are primarily based around issues I've had with various addictions in my life. And I kept going through this process of, I have an addiction. I started smoking cigarettes and being addicted to nicotine by my 13th birthday, so I started pretty young. And I, you know, got rid of cigarettes when I was 22. And, of course, when I was a teenager, I was shooting drugs. Of course, this is a long time ago, 40-plus years ago. Anyhow, I'd go through a process of getting rid of an addiction, and then I would develop another one. And I finally came to a point where I wanted to understand that process. And I came across some work and some teachings that helped me understand that addictions are a symptom rather than a cause, which is why we see so many people, particularly, you know, we notice in the news celebrities who are going in and out of rehab like, you know, hamsters on a wheel. And we find that the reason they're doing that is because the core issues are not being addressed. It's as simple as that. It's not, you know, rocket science in that sense. It's not that complicated. It's just that a lot of us don't really want to face the truth. The truth is addictions are totally treatable. We're totally capable of getting over them, recovering, being recovered. And I say that with all due respect to AA and organizations like that, which have obviously helped millions of people tremendously. But I'm here to say that I believe we can recover. I believe that we are not victims of drugs and alcohol. I believe that we use them to self-medicate, and that when we are able to heal out of the reasons we are self-medicating, we can let go of those addictions. I know that's a bold assertion, but I've experienced it in my own life, and I've seen it happen in other people's lives. So I know that it's a doable proposition.
So you're saying that addiction is not something that you have to fight or stay on top of your entire life. Like in AA, you have to keep on going to meetings for the rest of your life, especially, as they say, if you want to stay sober. You're saying that that's not necessary.
I don't have to do it. I can say it for me. I've never been to an AA meeting. There are people I know who have gone for years, and some who have dropped out, some who continue, some who've been successful in their pursuit of a life that works better for them, and some who have not. But everybody I know who's gone through that process and has not dealt with their core emotional wounding are still having major issues. I think it was John Bradshaw 20 plus years ago who wrote about, really started to talk about being a what he called a dry drunk, where he was sober, but he was still a jerk, around, which he totally admitted, around his family and his friends. He was a rageaholic, and not very pleasant to be around. And so I'm really interested in that place that I know we can get to, where not only have we dropped our addictive behavior, but we've healed the emotional issues behind our addictive behavior so that we are able to show up in the world with a whole lot more love and patience and kindness and generosity and mercy and compassion and forgiveness.
Now let's just clarify that this just doesn't pertain to strictly addictions that we know of, drug and drink. This can't pertain to any distraction from our real emotional issue. Is that correct?
Anything at all. We're enormously inventive beings, we humans. And so I think most of us have know people or have had issues ourselves with too much TV, too much work, too much sex,
too much eating.
Yeah, too much eating. That's a really common one. Too much sugar, too much caffeine. Caffeine's, of course, a legal drug, but it's a psychoactive chemical. And too much of it can really send people, over the moon. I've been there. That's why Starbucks has been so popular, of course. So we get our fix one way or another. And, of course, what I talk about in Drunk with Wonder more than I think most people talk about, certainly more than I've heard, is that we are addicted. Every single person on this planet is addicted to adrenaline.
That's it, exactly.
We're all addicted to it. We differ in how we get our fix. And I will further say, I don't really think there's any particular reason for us to fret too much about it. I mean, our bodies are designed, and I could spend a whole hour with you just talking about the physiology and the biology of our triune brains and our adrenaline and our, the primal emotions that have been mapped down into the amygdala and so on, about the why behind all of this. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, was because I was so fascinated with all of this that I wanted to put a book out there that could explain for the segment of the population who cares what's going on. For example, have you ever wondered why some things or some people, some situations, it seems really easy to get triggered? And what I mean by triggered is become at the effect of really strong emotions that someone or some situation seems to kind of press a button in you, and you kind of feel helpless. Why is that? I explain that in Drunk with Wonder. I talk at length about what's going on physiologically and how that has been a survival strategy for our species for hundreds of thousands of years, and why it isn't so useful anymore in this civilization we find ourselves in. So you asked, Jules, why I wrote Drunk with Wonder, and of course I have a number of reasons. A chief among them is to give people an understanding, a model, that there is a way to move through our emotional trauma into healing, that people are successful in it all the time, and it requires some significant change in our behavior and in the way we see the world. We, for example, one of the big things is we need to let go of feeling as though we are victims and blaming someone else. It's the alcohol's fault. It's my mother's fault. It's my father's fault. It's fill in the blank. You know, if only you were different, I'd be fine. Instead of saying, I'm going to stop all that right here and right now. I realize, for example, because of your show, Law of Attraction Talk Radio, I'm making perhaps a wild assumption that many of your listeners actually understand the concept of the Law of Attraction, which means that essentially whatever frequency we are vibrating at, we attract more of. So if we're angry at the world because we think we've been done wrong, then guess what? We attract angry people. We keep proving, and I use quotes around the word proving, that we're right, that whatever story that we're running that we use to explain our experiences in the world is the right story. And when we're running victim consciousness, we wind up listening to the story that it's other people's fault that we're in the fix we're in. Now, what's the payoff for that? Well, we don't have to take any action. We don't have to change. We don't have to show up in the world with an open heart, vulnerable, conscious, and willing to put our lives on the line for what we believe in. Because that can be terrifying if we've never done it before and we don't have any models in our own lives of people who are doing that. Now, we all have heroes, or I assume most of us have heroes. Some of us have comic book heroes. Some of us have people who actually lived in the world, like Nelson Mandela, or Martin Luther King, or Gandhi, or Mother Teresa, or just a few of the people that I talk about in Drunk with Wonder who have touched me very deeply. And I know this is a very popular phrase that many people and organizations use, but Gandhi's, we must be the change we wish to see in the world, is one of my guiding lights. And I want to parse that very carefully. We, you and I, must be the change we wish to see. In other words, if we wish to see peace in the world, we must be peace. In order to be peace, we have to learn enough about ourselves and understand enough about our background, where we've been coming from, what that's done to us emotionally, so that we can find the tools we need. And believe me, they're out there. I got some of them in Drunk with Wonder. There are lots of other tools. I have a 100-book bibliography in the back of Drunk with Wonder to help people find lots of other sources for how to learn some of these amazing tools. But the bottom line is that people need to understand that they can make peace with themselves and their lives. They can come to understand the unconditional love that is the source of everything in this universe and begin to vibrate at a frequency that attracts love, passion, abundance, health, peace, harmony, bliss, joy. How about living a joy-based life?
That's what we need to be striving for.
You know, that's to me the real heroes are those of us who are able to stand in the fire of what seems to be the utter insanity of so much of what's going on in the world. And still choose love.
Beautifully said. Now, the title of the book, Drunk with Wonder, Awakening to the God Within. Why that title? I mean, what did you really mean by it?
When I'm speaking of being drunk with wonder, I very deliberately chose a provocative title. One of the reasons I chose Drunk with Wonder was because I drank alcohol to excess quite routinely for over 30 years. And I quit 8 years ago this month. And I wondered what was the payoff for being intoxicated, because I used and abused and was addicted to a number of different drugs in my life. And I think that if we don't deal with the payoff for using drugs, we're missing the mark. We're missing what's really going on. And people who are involved in abusing drugs and alcohol, who hear somebody pontificating about how they're wrong and they shouldn't be doing that and they're somehow lacking in moral fiber, is just a bunch of hooey, frankly. I think it's a bunch of judgmental nonsense. And if you look carefully, many of the people making the most profound judgments about this kind of thing, you know, they're drinking to excess, they're smoking cigarettes, they're doing lots of caffeine, and then they'll go, well, yeah, but those are legal, and And your point is, you know, I mean, what's legal and what's illegal is often a matter of politics more than it's a matter of anything else. It's clear that that cigarettes and alcohol cause far more damage to people, cause far more cost to our terribly strained healthcare system than all of the other drugs put together. And yet people don't talk about that. People don't really own the truth about what's going on. So the first thing is, the payoff for using drugs and alcohol is that you get oblivion. You get numb. You get distracted. And what we get distracted from, what we become numb to, are emotions, trauma, particularly emotional trauma, like which is the result of post-traumatic stress disorder, is the result of emotional trauma. Whether it's seeing, you know, whether being a soldier and seeing your buddy's head blown off, or being in a car where your best friend is killed, or something is in my case where one of my best friends was killed suddenly in a motorcycle accident, or just a year ago on Valentine's Day, my wife's sister died in an automobile accident. And you get hit with those kinds of intense emotions, and you don't have any models for how to deal. It's like when you get hit with an emotion like that, with a situation like that, it's like plugging your, you know, putting your finger in an electric socket. It's incredibly intense. If you have tools on how to deal with those emotions, how to feel them fully, in healthy and responsible ways, safe ways, and you let that energy move through you. For example, if you're grounded and you touch a live electrical wire, then the energy moves harmlessly. If you're not grounded, it grounds in you and hurts or kills you. That's what emotions do. Emotions are just energy. When we're little, we are trained on what certain frequencies of energy are called, what they're labeled. And then we're taught that they're either safe or unsafe to feel. But if we back up from all of that, what I teach is that the pure, unconditional love that is the source of everything in this universe, that it comes out of our hearts as pure white light and then is refracted through our experiences, and we are taught that this frequency has the color red and it means anger, and anger's scary, and stay away from it. Pretend you don't have it. And this one over here, this means, grief. And that's really scary, and you don't want to go there either. You know, pretend that doesn't happen. And if you have grief, if you're experiencing grief, be quiet. You know, that all of that kind of stuff. But all of this, the point I'm trying to make here is that all of this is about stories we're taught. It's not the truth. It's just stories. And there are other, I think, healthier, cleaner, sweeter, more poignant stories that we can learn that give us an opportunity to feel all of our feelings fully and to understand that any feeling fully felt shifts. It has to. when the energy is allowed to move through us rather than being stuck and festering, then we're able to live a passion-filled life. When we, you know, when we have disappointments in our life and we feel stuck or helpless, and remember, we feel stuck and helpless when we're a victim, right? So you see how this logic moves along. We need to let go of feeling like a victim. We need to learn how to feel our feelings fully. And, of course, on the other side of that, we can think more clearly and we can make more intelligent, wiser, healthier choices about what we want to do for our lives. We don't feel stuck anymore because we realize we're, to use a cliche, we're the authors of our story. And if we don't like the way it's going, change it. And we can change it when we come to terms with the truth that we're not victims.
Let me ask you a question on the other side. What if a person constantly blames themselves for all of the problems of the world, or for all of their neighbor's problems, or all their mother's problems? What if they take it to the other extreme?
Instead of saying, if only you were different, I'd be better, you're saying, in effect, if only I were different, I'd be better. What I found, Jules, is that virtually every person I've ever talked to really deeply about this, every client I've ever had, every single one, down deep has some kind of a story that we're irreparably broken, that we're damaged goods, and that there is no chance we will ever be able to fix that. We're just born screwed. And that's a really deep kind of cultural identity. And I'm here to say I think it's a really sad, mistaken story that needs to be let go of. Because until we're willing to face that kind of a story and say, the truth is, I'm a child of God. Everyone is a child of God, Goddess. And our birthright is joy. Our birthright is peace and harmony and unconditional love. And we've been brought up on a pack of lies that say that we're born bad, we're born sinners, and that there's nothing we can do about it except turn our lives over to an intercessory. If you buy into the idea that there's nothing we can do, then you always need an intercessor around. You need a father. You need a confessor, you need a priest, you need a minister, you need a politician, parents, you need somebody to be in charge, because you're not. So I'm proposing this kind of radical idea that we turn that completely on its head and take responsibility for our lives, take responsibility for our moment-to-moment experience, because until we do, we're going to keep running some kind of a victim story or another, and people are going to keep staying stuck in their lives that they are unhappy with. And when we're really unhappy, what do we tend to want to do? Well, we want to distract ourselves because feeling unhappy is very painful. Very painful. So, let's change. Let's have an attitude adjustment.
So you mentioned intercessor, a parent figure, or someone superior to us. Is that not our concept of turning everything over to God? In other words, what are we supposed to be doing with God?
What we're supposed to be doing with God is understanding that we are not separate from God, Goddess, that we are irreplaceably precious sparks of God, Goddess ourselves, that we are God made manifest. We are God in form. And as such, as I said, our birthright is joy and unconditional love, that we source it, that we don't look for it or expect it or insist on it outside of ourselves. This is about being the change. This is about we're getting back to the law of attraction. The law of attraction says that whatever it is that you are running, whatever energy, whatever thought patterns, whatever stories that you hold, you get more of. You attract more of that level of energy. I mean, I want you to know that I've been studying the law of attraction and a lot of this material for 17 years myself. A fellow named Ernest Holmes wrote, you know, Science of Mind, and it was first published in 1926. Chapter 18 is titled The Law of Attraction. A lot of people around today are stunned to hear that. They thought that was, this is really new, but it's not really new. And it's been available for people for generations already, in just in this country. So I have gotten it more and more profoundly in my own life that when there's something that isn't working for me in my life, the only person responsible for it is me. So I stop blaming other people, and I stop blaming situations, and take responsibility. The cold winter weather is really getting me down. Instead of complaining about the cold winter weather, I get in the car and head south. I do something about it. I don't complain. Because when I complain, I create more. And I think many of us are really, really tired with that. And I know there are tough questions out there. I know that what's going on in the world is really challenging. But let's face it, if we're God, then we're really good at this game, right? We're God.
And we can change our reality.
Yeah, we can. And I want to make it clear, when I'm talking about what I see going on in the world, it's not the same thing as saying, I am a helpless victim and I can't do anything about it. I'm saying something directly opposite to that. We can't change what we don't own. If we aren't willing to face it and tell the truth, we can never change it because we're still being run by it. And so that's what I see going on. So many people in the world are stuck in an old story through no fault of their own. It's not like they woke up one morning and go, you know what, I'm going to stay stuck in this old screwy story. We just don't know any different. We haven't had that many models in the world of how to do it differently. And so my prayer was to bring out Drunk with Wonder and to be a voice, and I know we need many voices, to feel useful is probably about the highest thing I can know of, that I know of in the world to be, is to show up useful. And what I know from hundreds of people I've heard specifically talk about their experience with Drunk with Wonder is that it's made a difference in their lives, a positive difference. And that's the highest compliment I can get.
Well, yes, I could see how your book would really make a difference in many people's lives. Let's go on and talk about the conversation with the God within you and your channeling of Arandaho.
This is about, do my math, 18 years ago. Almost, it'll be 18 years ago in April. I woke up out of this dream. It was the most amazing dream I've ever had in my life. It was the only dream I can ever remember waking up laughing out loud. I was so intrigued by that dream that I decided to go visit a friend of mine who had recently become a hypnotherapist. And her name is Marilyn Gordon. She's a practicing hypnotherapist and has a hypnotherapy school in Oakland, California. She's phenomenal. I recommend her very highly. Wonderful, gifted human being, very, very high vibration. And so I went to see her. I was successfully hypnotized. And then her own guidance told her to check in and see if there was some energy, some entity, if you will, some focus of consciousness who was willing to speak through me. And so Arandaho started talking, and we have so many of those early conversations on tape still. And Steve, had the opportunity to have the holy living heck scared out of me because I was running consciously a story that, channeling, I mean, I read Seth. I read a lot of stuff. I'm really fascinated with New Thought and consciousness studies, but I was still skeptical. And so then when I went into this hypnotic trance and came out and Marilyn said, guess what, listen to this tape, the hairs on the back of my neck stood straight up, and I went, oh, God, they're going to come get me. They're going to come get me. And so I got to go through my own journey of rejecting that part of me, thinking, you know, there's something wrong with me, there's something broken in me that would even do this. And yet, Arandaho's words have always been so gentle, so loving, so conscious. He's never, ever told me what to do or gotten uptight or upset. It's just always pure love. He has a sense of humor and an attitude, but pure love. And so I went through this multi-year process. I started going to more workshops, and I do this kind of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing, where I would go to a week-long retreat and eat organic and be really healthy and do yoga, and then I'd come home and I'd drink myself into a stupor. And why did I do that? Why do I do that? What am I missing? And so I started this interior dialogue with Arandaho. At first, the only way I knew of to contact him was through this hypnotherapy. And eventually, I took some hypnotherapy classes from Marilyn, and I learned how to hypnotize myself. And so I began to do it on a more internal basis. But it wasn't until I stopped drinking that this voice, this energy, I began to integrate it into myself, into this self with a capital S. One of the first things Arandaho ever said was that I was going to become Arandaho when I grew up, that he was a way shower, that there was nothing, no part of him that I was not, but that until I was willing to stand in the truth that we are all consciousness, that we are all pure love, that we are all pure light, that we dance this little dance of, oh yeah, you know, higher consciousness is over here and, you know, the mortal human's over here. And so we can listen to the really wise ones, and then we can, of course, ignore them and go about our business and do our suffering and our dance and stay in our addictions and what isn't working because that's familiar and comfortable. And so that's what I did. I just totally own that's what I did. But I gradually learned enough so that I could begin changing my life. And now, all these years later, with Drunk with Wonder out, I feel that I've done a decent job at communicating what I've discovered. And I believe that what I've discovered is applicable to virtually every person on the planet, that there is nobody who is so screwed up that they can't change if they choose to. And it can be challenging to get to a place where we're conscious enough to even understand that we have a choice. And I realize that until we understand that we have a choice, it can seem just exactly like we don't have a choice. And I've heard all about it in terms of people say, well, what about this person? They didn't have a choice, and they didn't have a choice. And go ahead and make that argument, and notice that when you make that argument, you're making an argument to stay stuck. You're making an argument to stay in fear-based consciousness. And my only question is, how's that working out for you?
How's that working out for you? That is a great question. So let me ask, do you think that you have matured into Arandaho?
I think that what I learned is that I never, and we'll use a double negative here just to freak you out, I never wasn't Arandaho. I never wasn't God. There was never a time when I or anyone was not the God I am. We just learned a really compelling story that we were lost and alone. One of the questions, Jules, that comes up often is, well, how do you get started with this? How do you get started changing your life? And my answer is always, we must become present. We must become able to pay attention with the isness of the now moment. Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about isness, and I talk about it in Drunk with Wonder. The isness is the way of the world, the way of it, outside of our stories that make that isness right or wrong. You know, it just is the way it is. We can say that a forest fire is a horrible thing. It kills animals and trees. It creates pollution. It, you know, it has all of these consequences that we are taught to label as negative. And yet, as someone who had a fire less than a mile away, really bad ones last summer with all those lightning storms, what I see when I look out the door right now is this impossible emerald green where the fire was last year. And I understand at a deeper level about fire ecology. And all of these wildflowers are starting to come up, and all of these new trees, all of this new life. I think, oh, so there's this gift to fire. And so the point here is that without being present in the moment, we're lost in story. And the stories most of us are lost in are stories of fear and lack that we were taught as part of growing up. And so in order to become sovereign lords of our lives, we must be willing to learn. I don't know how to do it myself. I don't know how to do it without some form of mindfulness meditation practice. That can be as simple as paying attention to your breath. Just, oh, I'm breathing in now. Oh, I'm breathing out now. And just notice, when you stop and take a breath, a conscious breath, and then hold it for just a moment and then slowly let it out, energy shifts. Has to. And when we're lost in fear, one of the physiological signs is that we're breathing very shallowly, way up, you know, way up near our throat. We're not really breathing slowly and deeply. If you want to confront your fear, if you want to stop a panic attack or an anxiety attack, be willing to be present enough to choose to take a deep breath. And then choose to take another deep breath. You know, you can say a mantra of some kind. I learned transcendental meditation going on 30 years ago. You can use the word peace. I like the word joy. You know, whatever it is, a very simple one or at most two-syllable mantra. And all you're doing is you're focusing your attention on it, becoming present, letting go of your stories for just a moment. You know, you can always pick them up again. But for a moment, you know, I actively practice at least one 20-minute period of meditation pretty much every day. And the purpose of mindfulness meditation is to begin to notice that the ever-present awareness that is who we really are is not any of our thoughts. Thoughts come and go. But when we don't get attached to them, we notice them. Oh, there's a thought. There it goes. Oh, there's another thought. Huh? There it goes. Oh, this ever-present awareness, that's not my thoughts. And then when we notice that the stories that we use to explain our lives are thoughts. They're composed of thoughts. Everyone's a thought. And we string some thoughts together and we have a story. Oh, I'm this middle-aged guy, and life has passed me by, and I'm too old to, you know, learn anything new, and I'm just going to drink myself to death. That was one of my stories. And we all have some version of the reason my life isn't working out is because of the way I was treated when I was a kid, or because somebody cheated me, you know, what have you. One of the things you notice with successful people, if you study them, is that they never let a disaster or a setback keep them down. You know, it's one of my dearest friends and teachers loves to talk about the story of falling on your diaper. I just love that story. And it's just like, you know, think about being a kid. Think about if you had a kid. Think about if you have a grandkid like I do. And watch them learn to walk. You know, they'll stand up and they'll fall right down on their diaper. So if a little baby, you know, tries standing up once and falls down on their diaper, they're like, oh, I'm done. But no, of course they don't. They just keep getting up. And that's what we need to do in life. We need to just keep getting up. A successful life is a life that the person who's living it has gotten up one more time than they've fallen. So the idea here is that learning to be present, and it's a learning, it's a process. We've spent a lifetime becoming experts at distracting ourselves and being unconscious. So don't expect or assume that somehow you're supposed to be able to figure it out next week. To begin to really inculcate a new habit into our being, it takes a minimum of 30 days of daily practice, a minimum. Because what we're doing is we're learning new material, we're learning new information, new wisdom, and that has to work itself into our brain in new neuronal pathways. This is shown very clearly in What the Bleep, that we need to create new neuronal pathways, and we need to learn that once we stop putting our attention on fear and lack and old stories of not being good enough or not being worthy, those stories begin to wither. They may never go away completely. I don't think that's the point. I don't think we are a failure in any way if they never go away completely. It's just like, you know, a country road that falls into disuse. You can still see that there was a road there, but you don't have to, that doesn't mean you have to walk down it.
This might be a good time to mention that if you're interested in getting more information or getting this terrific book, go to www.drunkwithwonder.com and make sure you look for the worksheet on his website that you can work along with reading the book. It's really great.
Yes, there is a pretty simple worksheet up there with a number of questions that you can use to work your way through the book. I've actually, with a dear friend, developed a class, an 8-week or 24-hour class based on the book that we've taught very successfully in our spiritual community and called Living in Wonder. And we look forward to developing that material further. But for right now, right on the website, which is drunkwithwonder.com, you can pick up this 2-page little simple thing. We've had people who've had book groups who have picked up Drunk with Wonder and then used this little 2-page summary to help them work through a series of, you know, reading the book together and talking about the book together. It's been quite inspiring for some people. We have a number of exercises we suggest, and we freely have adopted many exercises from other very wise people we've come across, which I again point back to the large bibliography, which is just a fraction of the books I've used in my learning process. And one of my favorites, I know Oprah made this very popular, is to do a gratitude journal, to spend 30 days, every day, spend at least 5 minutes, and it's often good to do before going to bed, writing down everything you're grateful for that day. And guess what? The law of attraction says if you spend time every day consciously writing down what you're grateful for, more stuff shows up in your life to be grateful for.
In your book, you mentioned that it's extremely important for our well-being to get outside of ourselves and to think of being of service. Let's dive into that a bit.
Yeah, to just preface that with the idea that when we talk about the circle of life and the circle is unbroken, as we awaken into the truth and the magnificence of who we really are, which is not better than anybody else, but as magnificent as anyone else. We're all in this together. We're all God in form together. Then, and as we heal the emotional trauma that we've experienced in our lives, and our hearts begin to open, and more love begins to pour out of us, everybody eventually who goes through this process eventually learns that when we choose to be of service in the world, when we choose to make a difference somewhere, what we're doing is we're finding places, you know, to send our love out. And one of the open secrets of consciousness is that the more love we send into the world, the more love we make available to come through our hearts in a never-ending spiral of love and joy, compassion, appreciation, gratitude. So a sure sign of someone's awakening and healing is that they find something outside of themselves to put energy into. And it could be helping serve food to the homeless. It could be filling bags at a food kitchen, bags of food for people who are in need. It could be becoming trained as a hospice volunteer or a chaplain. Or, I mean, the list goes on of things that, you know, you could go in and be a teacher's aide one day a week, or, you know, read to kids in the library, or, you know, they can be really simple kind of small things. It can be as simple as paying attention when you're going through a line at the checkout stand and take a moment to be present and appreciative with the person who's checking you out. You know, I get really present and really appreciative with the person who's waiting on you in a restaurant. You get the most amazing reactions. You get really great service. You strike up a friendship. It's, you know, it's love's all around. And it's all about the eyes you're seeing through. So for me personally, I first discovered an organization called Challenge Day a little over 14 years ago. And Challenge Day has grown enormously since then. It was founded by a couple named Rich and Yvonne Dutra St. John. And this Challenge Day is an all-day program that two leaders go into a high school, middle school. We're all over the United States and Canada. And delivers a program, an all-day program, to up to 100 students and 20 or 25 adult volunteers. And this is obviously a great place where people can volunteer if you resonate with our young people. And the day is a whole series of exercises that helps kids break down the barriers of loneliness and isolation that so often plague our schools, which we believe is the root cause of drugs and alcohol and violence and cutting and suicide and fighting and gangs. All of that has a root cause of isolation and loneliness and helplessness. And so what we're teaching is a little bit of emotional literacy, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of how it can be safe to feel these emotions that seem so overwhelming, and that there are safe and healthy ways to feel our feelings and to get our emotions out without dumping them on somebody or without dumping them on ourselves through self-destructive behavior, which I was an expert at. And so challengeday.org, check it out. Our founders, Rich and Yvonne, were just on Oprah for the second time just a week ago, I guess it was the 26th, going on 2 weeks ago. And they have an amazing message for the world. And the core is that we're about creating a world that works for every single human being, where we celebrate diversity, where every single person on the planet feels safe, loved, and celebrated. We believe that's the only way we're ever going to get past war and get past terrorism, and get past the things that seem so scary and intractable in the world.
Can you tell us a little bit of what happens during Challenge Day? I know I saw in a video that some of the kids cross over after questions are put to them that make them think.
As I said, Challenge Day is a day-long program, and there are a whole bunch of exercises that are very carefully designed to create a room that feels as safe as possible. Because when we're getting vulnerable with what's below, what Challenge Day calls getting below the waterline, getting real, getting down below the image, because we've been taught to keep our feelings to ourselves, because we're taught that it's not safe to share what we're really feeling, we feel this isolation and loneliness because we don't feel that it's a safe world, so we don't trust anybody to tell our truth. And so we're running around, maybe we're a child of a divorced family. That's incredibly common, sadly enough. And a lot of kids feel really broken around that. And they feel like it's their fault when it didn't have anything to do with them. But they're carrying that around, that burden around. So we go through this process of a bunch of exercises to help kids feel safer. And then at the end of the, or toward getting on in the afternoon after lunch, we do this exercise called the power shuffle. And that is an opportunity where everybody stands on one side of a line facing across the room. And then one of the leaders calls out, and if this situation applies to you, cross the line and then turn around and look back. They go down 15 or 20 feet. Turn around and look back. See who's crossed the line with you and see who hasn't. How does that feel? It's all done in silence, by the way. So, you know, you can start out with everybody who's under 18 across the room. And, of course, that's most of the people in the room. And then come back, and then, you know, if you are black or African descent, cross the line. How does that feel? If you're Latino, you know, and various parts of, you know, aspects of what that means. And if you're Jewish, and if you're, you know, Middle Eastern, you know, how does that feel? And they show how pretty much every female in the room has been catcalled or insulted or had rude remarks made to them by boys. How does that feel? How does it feel to be a boy knowing that that could be your sister or your mother or your daughter or your wife? Is that okay with you? They ask a question like, if anybody in your family has ever died or is ill from alcohol. And a lot of people cross the line, always. And if you or anyone you know is addicted to tobacco or has been sick or died from tobacco. And you, again, it is just amazing in this day and age that there are still so many people who cross the line. The point of all of it is that you get an opportunity to see how other people are just like you. And you know, you think you're carrying the burdens of the world all by yourself because you don't talk to anybody about it. And then you see that most of the kids in the school are dealing with the same issues you are. And it's like, oh, I'm not alone. That piece right there, Jules, I'm not alone. That is so huge.
That is huge. And for some, I'm sure it's the first time that they've ever been able to bond with their own peers.
And they do. You know, we have school after school where the culture has actually changed. Where in our own area here, the one high school has gone from averaging a couple of fights a week to maybe a fight a month. We don't want any, but that's dropped by an enormous amount. And you can see there are kids who are actually self-organized to go, let's go pick up litter today. Let's go do something useful. See that basic, there's this basic, I think it's almost instinctual, where as soon as you start feeling good about yourself, you start feeling loved and appreciated, you want to give it back. So you put it, you want to put it out there in the world. You want to have a place to put it. It's so important that we be of service. So after this power shuffle, after we get through this process, then we sit back down in our small groups, and we talk with each other about how that was for us. And then one of the final things we do in the day is have a what we call a speak out, where anybody who's in the room and has had their experiences is able to get up on the mic, the microphone, and say something about what they never want to see again or the way they want it to be different. If they have someone in the room that they'd like to apologize to, they will often do that. I've seen many times, I've seen young people apologize to parents who are in the room, or brothers or sisters, or friends. I've seen parents, teachers, apologize to kids in the room, quite publicly. I've seen bullies, who are those who are labeled as bullies, who've acted like we think bullies act, stand up and apologize and ask for forgiveness from people that they've been teasing and harassing and humiliating and beating up for their entire school lives. And it's transformational. There was actually an award-winning Canadian special called The Bully Solution. The Bully Solution that was followed a child who was horribly abused in a Canadian school and showed the transformation after Challenge Day. And they actually came back several months later and, how's it doing? You know, how's it going? They did follow-up. It really changes people's lives.
Wow, talk about getting outside of yourself, getting outside of your problems. All you have to do is go and volunteer at a Challenge Day somewhere near you and understand that your problems are probably a lot less than what these kids are experiencing.
Oh, absolutely. When it's happening in a school in your area, they're almost always looking for adult volunteers to help out. And there are often now in many parts of the country, there are what we call circles of change, which are community groups that get together with the purpose of bringing more Challenge Day and, you know, doing fundraising, and because it's all nonprofit, of course, and in finding ways to not only bring Challenge Day into the community, but then to keep the new spirit alive and really change over time so it's different. And we don't just fall back into the old fear-based way of doing things.
Okay, again, that's www.drunkwithwonder.com and challengeday.org.
I want to make sure everybody knows that I have a free monthly newsletter that has a lot of great material in it that's available from my homepage, Drunk with Wonder. And, of course, I never rent or sell my list. And I also have an audio version of the book that I did that many people have really appreciated a lot. And that's available on iTunes or audible.com. And, of course, my book is available on my website, toll-free ordering, internet ordering. But you can also get it from Amazon if you wish.
Well, this has been a real treat, Steve. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about all these important things that we need to address to be conscious creators, to have that well-being. We need to get down to the root cause of a lot of our problems. And I really want to thank you for bringing it to our attention. And I want to thank you for your wonderful book and website, and especially for telling us about Challenge Day. Boy, this is just a wonderful program and just a neat way that we can be of service to everyone. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you as well, Jules. I feel very good about your show and about what you're doing. And I think you're a great example of how people can make a difference in the world. You've gone out of your way to spend your time to promote higher consciousness, to promote the law of attraction, the understanding of that, and how people can change their lives by learning how to use the law of attraction to their benefit.
Well, thank you, Steve. And I got to say, I'm enjoying every second of it. I'm learning just right along with all the listeners. So, that's it for this week, and I will talk to you all next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye. You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.